Good morning, I'm Matt Schaefer. Welcome back to the Boston Sunday Review. A corpse, an abandoned baby, and Christmas are at the center of The Body in the Sleigh, the new mystery from Agatha Award-winning novelist Catherine Hall Page, who joins us here this morning on the Boston Sunday Review. Good morning.
Good morning, Matt. It's always a pleasure to be here.
This book takes place on Sand Pear Island on the coast of Maine. It is the summer home of Faith Fairchild. Your sleuth is there for the Christmas holidays with her family.
Yes. Unfortunately, I had to give her minister husband pancreatitis in order for him to be up there in Maine recuperating at their cottage during his busy season. But I had always wanted to write a Christmas mystery, and a lot of things suggested that this would be the way to do it.
Typically, Tom would be back home in Elford.
Yep, a totally fictitious town west of Boston.
Kind of like Lexington or Concord.
Yeah, and about the size of Carlisle or Lincoln. I took little bits and pieces of a lot of places and created a totally new entity.
He's a minister.
Yes.
So this is his busy time of season.
This is his busy time of season. And in fact, Faith reflects on Christmas Eve that it's odd because she is the daughter and granddaughter of Men of the Cloth, you know, not to be related to the person in the pulpit.
Sand Pear is very different from the Hamptons, where Faith
yes.
spent her childhood summers.
Yes. Faith grew up in Manhattan. She's really a real dyed-in-the-wool New Yorker. And the last thing that she or her younger sister planned was to marry Men of the Cloth, because they'd grown up in this fishbowl existence, even though the fishbowl was on the Upper East Side. And the family had some money. And, you know, Faith's idea of a vacation was Hamptons, maybe Provence, you know, and in the wintertime, the Caribbean. So when she ended up in New England, because the heart knows no reason, and she fell in love with Tom, friends of theirs said, oh, you have to come to this island. And these friends were descendants of the rusticators, and I know you know all about them, you know, the people who would jump into the freezing cold Maine waters, and kind of that Teddy Roosevelt ethic. And so Faith finds herself on this island, but she falls in love with the place, as many people do. And so now that they have a cottage, and that's their home.
So did you have to go, how do I get them up there? Whoops, we'll
yes.
make Tom sick.
Yes, that's exactly that.
And
is
did
exactly
Tom want to get sick?
Well, Tom had no choice about it. So I was able to also put in a little bit about, well, you know, how you get concerned when a spouse, a partner, so forth, undergoes some kinds of health difficulties. One of the things about writing mysteries now that differs from earlier days, where excellent mysteries were being written, but they were more plot-driven, is readers want to read about relationships. They want characters really fleshed out. So I could write about Faith being worried about Tom. I could write about Tom being worried about Tom.
And why is that? Who pioneered that?
I don't think there was any one person who was doing that, but readers became more demanding. I would put that in maybe the late 70s, early 80s. And then, of course, in the middle to late 80s, we got all these writers who, Sarah Paretsky, Sue Grafton, who were pioneering with women sleuths.
Bob Parker
writing
John
about,
Kellerman.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
you have a character yeah. that appears book after book after yeah. book after book, and we were going to talk about it later, but we may as well talk about it now.
Okay.
In a weird way, it's like every book is a postcard or letter bringing you up to date on what's been happening in their lives.
Oh, that's just the most lovely way of putting it. You do have a way with words, Matt. Exactly. And I was amazed after the first book, The Body and the Belfry, which is now, much to my surprise, 18 books ago, when I would get letters. In those days, you got letters. Now people can email me on my website. People asking me things like, is Faith going to have another baby? They were talking about her as if she were a real person. Now, she seemed like a real person to me, but the fact that this character, this product of my imagination, had taken on this kind of life of her own to the readers was absolutely marvelous.
So she's married to a minister,
yep.
Two kids.
Yep. Yep. Now, yeah. And the older one, Ben, is in those dreaded middle years. The last book dealt with some of his difficulties. When I wrote the first book, a very close friend who sadly is gone now, but very big in the mystery world, William Deake, just a scholar, a mystery scholar, wrote, and that's how we met, told me how much he liked the book. But he said, be very careful. He said, keep this kid and any other kids who might come along off stage. Don't make them cute. You know, and he was absolutely right. You know, because I can't stand books where, you know, you've got all of these precocious little Sherlocks running around helping their parental sleuths. So I took that advice to heart. And you don't really, the kids, you know, they're there, but then Faith obviously has to take care of them. You really encumber a sleuth when you give her kids.
Christmas is a time for kids, and the island is getting into the Christmas spirit.
Yes, yes. As only the main coast, well, I imagine other sea coast towns do, but on the main coast, on these islands, Santa arrives, you know, not in a sleigh, but in a lobster boat. And the fishermen, the boats, because many fishermen, of course, fish all year round for lobster. And it's a very hard life. But they decorate their boats with wreaths and lights and every lawn. I mean, I think Walmart and all those places must just sell out of all of those little kind of blow up Christmas decorations and different things. They take it very seriously.
This is the kind of place where everyone thinks they know everyone else's business.
Yes.
And then goat farmer cheesemaker Mary Bethany finds an abandoned baby in the barn.
Manger,
and an envelope filled with cash.
Yes. And it's on Christmas Eve. In fact, the first line of the book states, the Christmas Eve sky was filled with stars when Mary Bethany found a baby in her barn. Bethany is actually the hometown of that other Mary.
And Lazarus as well.
And Lazarus as well. You know your Bible there. And I have woven the Christmas story throughout this book. There are really kind of a couple of things going on. But this age-old tale, which I see in a kind of non-denominational way as a tale during a season of hope, during the season of dark, where light triumphs. And when we're talking about mysteries, we're talking about the triumph of order over chaos and evil. So, you know, that became very important. And Mary, you know, and the note with the baby says that his name is Christopher.
And when we're talking about Faith Fairchild, your fictional sleuth, we're talking about a woman who, through no fault of her own, keeps on stumbling book after book. Onto dead bodies, and this book, of course, is no different. She's out with the kid. They're at the kids. They're at a display.
Yep.
And she looks into the sleigh, and there's a dead body.
Yes, it's an old classic sleigh that the good people at the Historical Society have put on the lawn of their little tiny house where they have their exhibits. And so they posed a couple of mannequins in there with little presents and old, you know, dressed up in old sleigh costumes that people wore at the turn of the century. And Faith is about to take a photograph of her kids in front of it when she realizes that it's not three mannequins, it's two mannequins and the corpse.
She's an island girl who apparently got mixed up in drugs.
Yeah, yeah. And this is sadly a huge problem. I mean, it's a problem in many communities. It's a very big problem in this part of Maine that I know quite well, because there is literally, when I tell you literally, nothing for these kids to do on the island. And they will drive an hour, teenagers will drive an hour to Ellsworth, Maine, where there is a 24-hour Denny's, just because they're so bored. They turn to very, very serious substance abuse.
A corpse in the sleigh, a baby in the barn. Might there be a possible connection?
Well, you should be writing mystery novels. The connection becomes Faith, you know, because she has to tie up all the loose ends and also find the connection between the two, and obviously there is, although it takes the entire book to establish that. But Mary Bethany, she's not a recluse, but she keeps to herself, and she knows she has to enlist someone's aid, and Faith is an outsider, and she knows that Faith has been involved again, stumbling across bodies, and she needs to find the birth mother. She assumes that this person needs help. Obviously she does, and she doesn't feel right about just keeping this baby.
When you are plotting a murder mystery, do you begin with a beginning or do you begin with the end?
You know, no one has ever asked me that question before. Neither. I really begin in a much more of an amorphous what if. I begin with what if Faith found this body in place? All right, I kind of have that notion. And then I'm much more involved in the middle. How would that play out, this really horrific discovery? How would that play out? But I do always know who did it. You know, some mystery writers don't. I need to know.
How important is pacing?
I think pacing is essential in a mystery. In fact, there are two elements for me in my mysteries, and these are, you know, traditional classic mysteries, more in the style of Agatha Christie type mysteries, where the puzzle is the one thing. You've got to really have a good puzzle, challenge the reader, play fair with the reader, all of those things. But then that's the pacing, is you've got to keep that puzzle moving. You've got to create suspense and keep things moving.
And what about misdirection and red herrings, and why are they called red and herrings?
Oh, okay. That's actually very interesting. Red herrings date back to fox hunts in Britain. And the red herrings were actually red because they were smoked and they turned that red color. And they used to drag those herrings across the path of the hunt in order to provide a little bit more interest for themselves, to lead the dogs astray from the fox. So, you know,
so to take them off the path.
Off the beaten path. And that's what a red herring does. But as I mentioned, you need to play fair with the reader. I'm describing a crime that's actually happened. Nora, and I became extremely fond of this Nora, and was very sad that she had to die for the sake of the book, and her boyfriend Jake, who is just totally bereft by all of this. So I had to tell about this crime, but at the same time, I'm creating these diversions so that the reader can't guess. But they have to be reasonable. At the end of the book, you need to say, she gave me all the clues. I should have guessed that. I can't introduce what I call the evil twin from Australia at the end of the book and, you know, and have you say, wait a minute, you know, where was this person in the book?
So no deus ex machina.
No, not in my books. I play fair.
And you know that as your
Yes.
As you're writing.
Yes, I do. I think of that very consciously. Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to find out how Catherine Hall Page got into the mystery business and find out about why a Christmas book. After we pause for these words, you are tuned to the Boston Sunday Review.